I'm Zach Manos. It is early May. Joining me on the other end of the line, Sean O'Neill. We finally get together for the big pod, bud.
I think every 6 weeks is a reasonable schedule.
I think so, too. You know, there's a...
What's happened? What name one thing that's gone on in the last 6 weeks?
Like, is anything relevant happened in the NHL in the past 6 weeks? No. Habs season was over.
Habs season.
Who cares?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
After that, it doesn't really matter.
So we did get the number 3 pick in the draft.
Oh, there was that, I suppose. There's also been a couple rounds of playoffs.
Yeah.
The Winnipeg Jets and the Vegas Golden Knights are playing each other to decide who goes to the Stanley Cup final, as everyone predicted when the season started. I mean, Winnipeg's a good team, but I still don't feel like a lot of us saw that coming.
No, I mean, I definitely didn't. And then for years, they were kind of the team that you looked at them on paper and you said, there's something there, but they just weren't able to put it together. And then they finally did. And I guess it does give some credence to those, you know, Habs fans that are saying that things can turn around pretty quickly in this league. You know, they were kind of a nothing team forever and ever, and then they kind of hit their stride this season. But yeah, the core was always there, and then it's finally...
To me, that they're actually from the days of the Atlanta Thrashers on that team. Like, that's how little movement there's been. And they turned it into something, which maybe the Thrashers would have too. There's no reason to believe this wasn't the exact path the Thrashers were on, which would be hilarious.
Yeah, and I mean, didn't make any big moves. And it took a while to get to this point, but I guess the patience paid off because there's a nice core there, and they're, 7 wins away from the Stanley Cup now.
So what happened? How did they do it without doing anything?
Well, I mean, getting Laine helped.
Yeah.
But I'm not freaking sure.
I tweeted the other day. Obvious now, I think, to everybody that the Toronto Maple Leafs made a mistake in passing on Laine to take Matthews. That's clearly one of them is a leader who pushes his team to playoff victories. Two of them now, 2 for 2 in his career, I believe. Meanwhile, Austin Matthews, 0 for 2, you know?
There is that.
You gotta look for
honestly, as great as Laine is, like, really, if you want my real answer as to what happened with that team, it's Scheifele falling to 7 somehow.
And it took a long time for Scheifele to become what he is. I mean, a lot of people had given up on him.
Yep.
And then of course, there was the addition of the ultra-clutch future Montreal Canadian, Paul Stastny.
Yeah.
Had a piece.
He's had a great playoff.
He has. And I mean, he's it's not the first time he's done that. So I wrote a piece for rabbithabs.com this week on the inevitability of Paul Stastny in Montreal. If you're a regular listener to this, we talked about this back around the trade deadline. When we were going through the possible centers, we pointed to, oh dear, Paul Stastny, that feels like the Marc Bergevin pick. And the more and more that happens in these playoffs, the more it seems inevitable that we will be overpaying Stastny to fill the center role. And he will come up short, and people say, well, wait until the playoffs. That's when he shows up.
It really does seem like a foregone conclusion at this point, right?
Absolutely. I truly believe
like, that. We're all just assuming he wants to sign here, and we know nothing about him and where he wants to play and what his priorities are, but...
Well,
he's a free agent. We're not getting Tavares. We've got a buttload of money to throw at him. We've got a giant hole at center. It makes a ton of sense, kind of, for everyone involved.
There are a lot of Montreal fans, I think, Sean, who still feel there's a chance we might get John Tavares. Could you just speak to them for a moment?
I mean, besides the fact that, you know, anything can happen, I guess, and we do have a lot of money, like...
Sure.
Montreal has to be at best 4th or 5th on the list of places he would end up.
At best.
At best. I mean, first of all, you know, true franchise caliber. I still think he's signing in New York. Like, true franchise caliber guys don't leave.
Mm-hmm. Stamkos got this far.
We do this every 2 or 3 years when someone hits the market, and almost inevitably they end up re-signing where they are. And if he does leave, I doubt it's going to be to the highest tax bracket, highest pressure team that just finished 28th in the league in points.
And you'd be the...
John Tavares would sign with Montreal ahead of, let alone the Islanders, but say the Sharks or the Golden Knights or any other team out there that has a lot of money to throw around should want to close a cup.
I mean, you'll hear
not to mention nicer weather, lower taxes, less pressure.
You'll hear the suggestion of, well, Shea Weber, Carey Price. That's a lot of gravitas, I think, is about the best you can say for that case. All speculation from all insiders is they are polite to Montreal. They say, yes, the Canadiens will certainly make an aggressive offer. They will do their best. But they, you know, you think about it for 2 seconds, as you just laid out. It just seems incredibly unlikely he'd be interested in the scenario.
You know, every time someone comes to Montreal, we all kind of hold our breath and think that the history of the franchise and the gravity of the franchise and the fact that it's the Canadiens is going to just woo someone to signing with the Habs. That's never really happened.
No, it has not.
Who are the biggest free agent signings in Montreal history? Kovalev and Camilleri, I guess.
Yeah, Danny Briere.
Danny Briere, 7 years after we really wanted him.
Exactly. Yeah, he's not coming. It's going to be Stastny. Look, I think I really, truly 100% believe it's Stastny. The only other person I could see is somehow pulling off a trade for O'Reilly with Buffalo. But is Buffalo really interested in keeping him?
It might not be either or. They could do both.
That would be... You could almost talk me into that. That's not so bad.
Yeah, me too.
You know, with Deneau's
I don't... I think Stastny's going to get overpaid. I think he's what, 32 or 33?
32.
I think his career high is 79 points. He's never even been a point-per-game guy.
Yeah.
I think he's a good player, but, you know, he's definitely a number two. And
he's probably
only got 1 or 2 years left of being a number two.
Yeah. And
so if you sign him, you can talk me into it. If he's your number two center and you trade for a number one, you can talk me into that pretty quick. But it's also the type of contract that has the potential to get pretty ugly in a hurry.
Yeah, but, I mean, we know Montreal's in win-now mode with Carey Price and Shea Weber, age as they are. It's if they want to try and force this window open somehow again, it's going to take... I mean, I don't think Stastny and O'Reilly are enough, even with Weber and Price and whatever pieces are around. I just don't... O'Reilly's very good. Probably one of the most underrated players in the NHL, but Stastny's, you know, he's essentially a third-line center on this Winnipeg team, and that's probably the right spot for him. You know, that's where he's actually going to excel. If you do the thing, again, where you try and force a guy into a position that probably doesn't make the most sense for him, he's going to come up short, most likely.
Yeah, and I mean, you're right. If the team's not going to trade Price or Weber, which by all accounts they're not going to, then you might as well push all your chips in the middle of the table. It's not going to work. I'm going to tell you right now, it's not going to work, but at least it's better than striving for the 8th playoff spot.
All right, so we both agree that what we expect to happen and what we would like to see happen are not the same thing. So what are you thinking should be the strategy here? Because they are in a weird spot where let's at least accept the reality that Weber and Price are here to stay and you can't be trading them.
Yeah.
Outside of that, what are your moves?
So Weber and Price are here to stay. Tavares isn't coming.
Yeah.
So you've got a team that has missed the playoffs 2 out of the last 3 years. Mm-hmm. Is several steps below Tampa, Boston, and Toronto in the Atlantic, I would say.
Yeah.
Now, you've got some really good young wingers and the number three pick, so there might be another winger being added to that equation. And you've got, if Weber's healthy, you've got a decent blue line. It's not great, but it's decent.
Yeah.
Again, I don't... If Stastny ends up getting something like 6 years for $36 million, which is kind of what I'm guessing, oh, man, that gets ugly in a hurry. But I think you sign whoever you can in free agency, whether it's Stastny or maybe you tuck yourself into Tyler Bozak as your second center. Like, they need someone at center.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't think Pacioretty's coming back.
No, I wouldn't say so.
For 1,000 different reasons. If you can turn Pacioretty plus into a top six center, and you roll out, you know, finally you've got something at the center position, you roll the team out next year, you hope Weber's healthy, you hope Price is, you know, back to being a 920 goalie instead of a sub 900 goalie, you know, you hope some of those young guys take the next step and you see what happens, I guess.
That's a lot of hoping and see what happens.
That's a lot of hoping. I think, you know, best case scenario, this is a playoff team, but it's not much more than that.
Yeah, they could 100% make the playoffs next season. Like, but I wouldn't...
Yeah, I almost anticipate that they will.
That wouldn't seem like success to me, though. I mean, this is an opportunity to accept what happened, which is the Carey Price, PK Subban, Max Pacioretty, or whatever version of that, with Galchenyuk and Gallagher as your young players. That core didn't deliver, whether that's on the coach or the players or the general manager. How are we going to shake that out? That window shut on that, so you've got to reconfigure with some big pieces contractually and potentially on the ice, though both were non-factors last season in Weber and Price due to injury for most of it. So even that is, those are two big question marks. That's, you know, that's assuming these two guys who have started to exhibit something of a pattern of poor health, you're depending on them to return to 100% next season. So I don't know. I think you run it out another season of not being great. You don't bottom out necessarily, but I don't know that you have to take big swings. It's a little bit of what I saw. We've seen Nashville be able to build. It's a little bit of what I saw Winnipeg build to this point now, I think, is informing this. And perhaps even, you know, Tampa Bay, et cetera. This is a team that, keep in mind, held on to Drouin when everything imaginable pointed to the fact that he was likely gone. And in the end, they turned him into a stud young draft pick in Sergachev. So maybe patience is the way to go. Maybe you don't try and force those center positions, which I think Bergevin is going to do. But I feel like just wait it out, get another decent draft pick. Just don't do anything. If Weber and Price are healthy, and you're inevitably going to add something because there's so much cap space. But, you know, use all that cap space that you burned a year off of as a tool. Hopefully you've had time to adjust to the reality that you didn't bring Markov and Radulov, which I think shook the plan a lot, and work from there. I don't know. I feel like Stastny will be another example of really trying to force an issue. And the same as the Drouin thing, throwing somebody into position they probably should, which...
And they're in a very awkward position because I think the window on this team winning a cup has closed. But as long as Price and Weber are on the roster, you're not going to be in rebuild mode. So you're just going to throw this lineup out there that is going to be kind of good, but not good enough.
Yeah.
And I get what you're saying. I think sort of a patient long when you have a desperate GM coming off a year in which he left $9 million in cap space and he can't afford to play in series.
See, I said, I was trying to map the good would be in my Conley Bay, but GM, maybe he learns. I know fans, especially there's caps, but I also, like, you've got to come out and explain it. And I just don't see Bergevin doing that either. I don't see him walking Montreal press and fans through the process the way I think they did a pretty good job of in Toronto.
Yeah, I mean, as much, you know, again, I think Bergevin should be out of a job already. I've been very critical of him, but you're kind of right in a way that, in some ways, the best thing you could do if you don't have the next guy lined up is that Molson says, you know, you're good for the next 2 years. Like, take that thing. That would probably be the wisest course. But I'm with you. I don't trust Bergevin to navigate that process successfully. And you do have to kind of sell the media and sell the fans on it. And he's proven zero willingness to do that so far.
Communicator in the early days. For me, that was one of the things from Pierre Gauthier. I guess losing in Montreal changes.
Bar.
Yeah, no, exactly. It didn't take much. As long as you weren't a corpse, you were going to seem charismatic. But, like, I maybe it's just the pressures of very...
Yeah. It seemed like a breath of fresh air. He seems to be one of those guys who handles success pretty well and doesn't handle adversity very well at all. and seen a lot of self-inflicted adversity over the last 2 years. And then, you know, sort of stay and that I'm skeptical of his ability to sort of walk.
I think there is a path to doing this and a strong communication. And here's what I would do. I don't know I've just voiced this to you via text message, which would be, you know, if people were privy to that, it's like the shows we never record are all on there.
pretty much, yeah.
But what I would love to see happen in this, okay, we need to readjust. Everyone's talked about this president role, yada, 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 that Shanahan has in Toronto. We're seeing it in a lot of places across the NHL. bring in Sakou Koivu. And I know he's not French, and it's probably the wrong idea for that reason. But man, would it be great to bring in Sakou Koivu. I think there's a trust in him of being kind of in that Shanahan vein of intelligent and forward-looking, but also part of the hockey establishment. Help him sell this message of whatever, you know, whatever we're doing here, which isn't a rebuild, but we are going to be patient and make sure we don't make any mistakes. And keep Marc Bergevin on, but I think that would also give the fans and the media some sense that, okay, Marc Bergevin is not running rampant over Jeff Molson, who doesn't know what he's doing here. There's Sakou Koivu, a hockey mind that for the most part we trust, who's in here. Or some, maybe not Sakou. I want to see Sakou Koivu, but I wouldn't want to hear anybody else, you know?
Counter argument is Joe Sakic.
Yeah, no, it's fair.
I mean, I know Shanahan's done a good job. A lot of those guys don't.
Iserman, come on. There's some good ones.
Yeah, there's some good ones and there's some bad ones. I mean, Koivu seems like a smart guy, but so did Trevor Linden, and that didn't work out. It might work. I'm not opposed to the idea.
I'd
prefer to see Kovalev, but that's just me.
That I would not be very excited about. I will be honest. Well, if Mike Camilleri would hurry up and retire, he seems like a smart guy. Sitting up there in that president's office with those stupid Adidas toes things he wears. All right, so we're talking.
Yeah, I think that the Habs, you know, the Habs are kind of in the spot where, you know, Calgary was before they got good again, sort of the end years of the Kiprusoff Ginla thing. Like Vancouver went through it a couple years ago.
It's sort of stuff.
Sometimes teams, you know, the window has apparently shut. There's, you know, it's very apparent that the window has shut to the rest of the world, but the team itself isn't willing to recognize it. And it's just sort of a slow, steady downhill climb for a couple of seasons. You know, we saw it in Calgary. We saw it in Vancouver. I think we're kind of seeing that in LA right now. And I kind of think that's what's going on with Montreal.
And I'd be fine.
That's why the Rangers sort of letter to their fans is so refreshing.
Yeah. And I'd be, exactly, that's why I'd be fine with watching suffering through the decline. If I had in place, that's what I think, I've Toronto through their rebuild. It's not dissimilar from the Montreal fan base, obviously. And its rabidity in the media, and just the craziness of it all, except only in one language. But it had nothing else to be sold on, I suppose. But once the plan was sold to them and they got excited about the young players, they were losing a lot of games. But they were still they seemed to be having more fun with it than we did. I'll tell you that, even a lot of accessory off.
Yeah. I don't think a complete teardown is what's needed. Like,
no.
You can sell me on a core of Galchenyuk, Drouin, Poling, Gallagher, Mete, Juulsen, and Zadina, whoever they pick with the third. You know, the cupboard's not bare. It's just that, you know, I don't think it's going to happen with Pacioretty and Alzner and Schnau and Shaw and, frankly, Weber and Price on the roster.
No, probably not. No. That's why I would love to see, as much as it hurts to say this, I think the greatest thing you could do for this team is admit this wasn't it, and deal Weber, yeah, and deal Carey Price, yeah, get out from under those contracts, just set yourself up with so much cap space, and figure it out from there. But I've come to that decision. I just don't think we can do it in the Price Weber era. Not even do it like win the cup. I don't give again.
A goodish run.
Best run we've had since the cup.
You know, borderline contenders for the hunt, and the hardest, you know, it's relatively easy to go from being a crappy team to a good team. I truly think the hardest thing in the league to do is to go from being a good team to a great team.
Yeah.
And they didn't do it. In fact, they went in the opposite direction. It's another middling team. You can go from being a middling team to a good team, but you still have to do that extra step. And this current team,
no, there is a path to it, absolutely. By the right person being installed at the right time, but it doesn't feel like it's going to line up at all. Like, you've got a general manager in a desperate situation, and that changes the way everybody deals with everything. If this was brand new, if we suddenly had a new GM on the scene, because you work with them as your veterans, perhaps. I can't see it when you know the guy making the decisions is going to be making really aggressive home run decisions. He has to be, unless he comes out and sells us on a new narrative. But I'd be shocked if that happened.
I hope I'm wrong, but I kind of will. The other thing is, and we've talked about this a couple of times already, but you know, the hope is, I mean, this is so obviously such a one-man team. And I think, you know, the hope has been for a couple of years now that you sneak into the playoffs and then anything can happen and Price gets hot. That used to happen. That doesn't really happen anymore.
No, it doesn't.
When's the last time a goalie kind of carried a team to a cup? We thought Quick did, but in retrospect, that was kind of
Black's most recent run, and that
Yeah. It's been 10 years since Cam Ward and J.S. Jagr, to say nothing of, you know, Ottawa and Berger and stuff. Like, I guess Tim Thomas, maybe, but even then he had a hell of a team in front of him.
I mean, so did Patrick Roy have a hell of a team in front of him. There were so many Hall of Famers on that Avalanche team.
Yeah.
Like,
Hasek
in Buffalo,
the last
sure.
time a goalie really just dragged his team to the cup final, it's been a while.
I think it was Hasek, and you could make the argument he's the single greatest goalie of all time, or if not that, you could say he had the highest peak ever, and that was when he did that.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just don't think, as great as Carey Price was at his peak, and we have to say we've probably even seen that now, we could see some very good seasons from him, but I don't think we're going to see the Hart Vezina again from him. He'll likely follow a same similar path to Lundqvist, which means we still likely have some good Carey Price seasons, very good Carey Price seasons ahead, and we can rely on him. I'm not discounting him entirely at this point.
No, neither am I.
He's not going to be a superhero who just takes an average team to the Stanley Cup final. He's, like you say, I don't know if anyone's going to do it, but not 32-year-old Carey Price, most likely.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've seen in the Olympics, we've seen what he's capable of doing with a great team in front of him. And I'm like you, I think he's going to bounce back. I think, you know, over the next 8 years, he'll probably have at least 4 good ones. He might win another Vezina. He'll probably get a couple more Vezina noms. Like, I don't think his career is done, but I don't think he should be putting that much cap space toward the goalie in this day and age.
No, you probably shouldn't. I mean, look who the guys are right now. Okay, Vasilevsky's had a good season. I don't know that Vasilevsky's a great goalie. That's a hell of a team. Like, that Tampa team's incredible. So I don't really know what Vasilevsky is, especially because the guy they had before him, Ben Bishop, also looked fucking great. And, you know, then he wasn't on Tampa anymore. And he's just Ben Bishop.
He's just a guy, kind of.
Exactly. I mean, Dallas does that to literally everybody.
Sure.
We'll make anybody into just a guy, it seems. But, yeah, and, you know, Winnipeg, that was probably the biggest thing stopping them, was they didn't have a goalie. But come on, nobody's acting as though the Winnipeg Jets are riding on that performance right now. Washington's got Holtby, who's solid, absolutely. And then there's Marc-Andre Fleury. So do with that what you will.
And, you know, Rene's going to win the Vezina this year, and rightfully so, but he was horrible in the playoffs. And even then, I still think he's kind of, it's more the team in front of him than it is him.
Yeah, Rene, like you say, he's likely going to win the Vezina, and I think his team is done with him. He's cost them 2 Stanley Cups potentially now.
Yeah.
Which brings me, we've been very serious, so let's get stupid and enter into the Twinity Wars. Listen, hear me out on this one, all right? Carey Price for P.K. Subban in the offseason. Pekka Rinne dealt somewhere else for a team just looking for him when we record. Staying here else in the off. I don't think so, but man.
Anyone can get traded. Wingusky got traded.
Yeah, so did P.K. Subban.
There are very few untouchable players in the league, as Elliot Friedman says, but just things like chatter.
Yeah, I don't know where that would... I mean, unless he is the miserable individual in the dressing room that some in the media painted him to be, which I don't think is necessarily true, even if I think it is acceptable that some people might find him a little grating, especially in the hockey world. He's not getting traded. Pekka Rinne, maybe. I don't know. But I assume they've lost a lot of confidence in Pekka Rinne's ability to deliver when he needs to deliver at this point. So I'm just putting it out there. Maybe go get a big name like Carey Price. I know they could afford him because P.K. Subban really is the same size.
You know, Montreal's not straight world.
Get about every else. that should consider is maybe, like, actually, I don't know if they should consider it. I would like them to consider going to get Carey Price or Shea Weber for something great from their team.
Yeah, and I think Dreisaitl. I wish Dreisaitl wasn't quite so untouchable.
That's what I'm saying, I guess. Deal Dreisaitl for our guys. Maybe both of them. You can have both. You can have Weber and Price for Dreisaitl. That's how desperate I am to re-kick this team into gear.
Would you do it for the Nuge?
What, Price?
Or Weber?
Weber, yeah. Price, no.
I'd do Weber, yeah. I'm saying.
Weber, yes, I would.
I almost think you get Nugent Hopkins for Pacioretty in pieces, but
I think you can. I mean, pieces? Like, I don't even know you need to include many pieces.
I would do that in a heartbeat. I know the shine's coming off Nugent Hopkins a little bit, but I'd rather have him than Stastny.
Yeah, I'd definitely rather have him than Stastny. He's a real thing.
Not really conversation.
Is it? Oh, I mean, you mean between Stastny or RNH?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think it's a reasonable conversation that RNH could be had by Montreal with the right, with a trade that could work out in our favor. Not even one that you'd necessarily see as hurtful.
And, I mean, you put Pacioretty on McDavid the wing?
Yeah. It would probably, I mean, he'd score 50 goals.
Yeah. The one GM more than is.
So that's another thing that I want the Habs to be thinking about Edmonton is, and I mean, that's the reason the Sharks are probably circling Montreal right now, is anytime there's blood in the water of a GM in trouble, you got a real opportunity to take advantage of that situation. And like you say, there's not too many GMs who are arguably in a worse position right now than Marc Bergevin. And Edmonton is that one, and they've got the pieces, and, you know, we've seen them make the mistake. Maybe they've already made it and won't make it again in the Taylor Hall deal, but I mean, if you can get Taylor Hall out of there for Larson, who knows what the hell you can do?
Yeah, man. What they've done in Edmonton, I think it's salvageable just because you have the best player in the world, so that solves a lot of problems. But, man, to take what they had and to turn it into what they have now is mind-blowing.
Yeah, no, it's what I'd like to see happen in Toronto. Let's go, Kyle Dubas. Mess this up, buddy.
Yeah, if they trade Marner for a decent second-line pairing and then sign Lucic to a $40 million contract, that would be nice.
No, I really thought, I mean, who knows? Anything can happen in Toronto. I'm not encouraged by the Kyle Dubas hiring. It seems like a smart choice and a forward-looking choice.
There
is potential, and the media already, I was reading this Toronto Star today, the media is already kicking this around. It's beautiful. I love this city sometimes. You know, there is, and there's a truth to this that I'm holding on to. Babcock is a big presence, who's much older than Kyle Dubas, and we know for a fact that they do not see eye to eye on how this team should be constructed. So that will be interesting to see how that works out in a place that, no doubt about it, I'm coming back here to be a hero. You know what I mean? Mike Babcock sees himself as the statue they're going to build down there in Jurassic Park. And so he's not going to let some 32-year-old fucking get in his way of that if he doesn't think the kid's doing the right thing.
I mean, that was always the thing, right? When they were collecting this brain trust, it was like, man, there's a lot of smart guys that they're bringing into that room. And it's probably going to work, but the other thing that happens when you bring a lot of smart guys into the room is that, you know, you can have too many chefs in the kitchen sometimes, and then there's big egos and there's big personalities, and they're going to clash. And, I mean, Lou's already gone. You know, Hunter's basically on his way out. Maybe Dubas and Babs find a way to coexist, but it's equally plausible that, you know, 18 months from now, one of them's on the way out.
Yeah, I mean, they're on.
You're setting yourself up for a power struggle there.
Yeah, they're on an identical contracts at this point. Which is interesting. That was smart by Shanahan, I think, to give nobody the upper hand. And maybe to say, hey, I'm not firing either of you unless things go, you know, super wrong here. You're both in this. Figure your shit out. Which is what somebody should have said to P.K. Subban and Max Pacioretty, but instead.
Here we are.
One more thing. We got like 10 minutes left on this. Because I have to go to a concert.
Oh, very nice.
Thank you. Thank you for mentioning that. Before we get out of here, there's been, speaking of office, front office changes, coaching changes, there's been significant movement in Montreal, just not with Marc Bergevin or the head coach in Claude Julien, but everybody else at all the other ranks is to some degree on the move. Sylvain Lefebvre is out. Finally.
Yeah.
That, I mean, I don't know. We say this all the time. We don't follow the juniors all that closely, but I know enough to know nobody seemed to be developing under the tutelage of Sylvain Lefebvre, no matter whether he was in Hamilton, St. John's, or Laval. That seemed inevitable. That's good news. J.J. Daniel, Dan Lacroix, out, which is good, because the things they were in charge of seemed to be the things that were really bad. Again, I don't know. None of us can know, but it seemed that Julien was willing to give the inherited coaches a year, or maybe if they'd had success longer, but they're gone. He'll bring in his own guys, and as we're recording this, it hasn't been officially announced, so we don't know what position he is, but Joël Bouchard, who will be coming to the Montreal Canadiens in some capacity, whether that's as head coach of the Laval Rocket or as the an assistant coach of the Montreal Canadiens or whatever that position that is, and maybe it's actually been announced in the last couple minutes, but he's leaving the Blainville Armada, a team that he kind of decided to leave his budding career as an analyst with RDS and go out and get into the school of hockey and bought this team and managed this team with the likes of some other NHLers and showed himself to be a fledgling hockey mind that the Canadians have at least now introduced in the system. They've also brought in Dominique Ducharme as an assistant coach, a move that seemed to be elevate him into a position a little bit higher than people expected. So, if nothing else, the future of Francophone coaches in the NHL is being populated by the Montreal Canadiens at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like I know these guys inside and out, but all of these moves seem to be, they're getting almost universal acclaim.
Yes. But so did the Marc Bergevin hiring, so,
yeah, that's fair. I mean, and this is, you know, this is usually what teams do. You usually get kind of one reshuffling of the chairs before, you know, the GM is given the boot or the coach is given the boot or both. But yeah, at least it seems like that next generation of leaders is in place. And the reviews really do, by people who know their shit, that, you know, people seem very high on all these hires.
Yeah, no, absolutely. None of them seem to be, well, I mean, Joël Bouchard played for the Montreal Canadiens, but let's face it, I remember him better from his days as an RDS analyst. Like, this isn't some old school Hab coming in who people see as, you know, it's just another one of the old boys club. This is somebody who went in and worked and has made themselves into, went and bothered to learn the game, really. So I'm happy with what we saw. Obviously, Lefebvre and Daniel and Dan Lacroix were not working. I thought they were all held on to longer probably than they should have been, but it's not something you want to sound off on all that frequently, because what the hell do we ever really know about any of this? But Lefebvre, definitely, I mean, to anybody paying any attention, it seemed more than obvious that he was something of an impediment to the forward progress of this organization. And there are some out there who will tell you quite emphatically the biggest problem of the Montreal Canadiens organization over the last 5 years, more than any blame you want to put. Well, I mean, Marc Bergevin is ultimately in charge of everything, so put it on him. But if there was one person who was making mistake after mistake and hurting the possibility of this team becoming something, a lot of people were happy to hang that on Lefebvre to some degree.
I mean, his record was atrocious. And you can argue that, you know, your record as a head coach at the junior level shouldn't be sort of your main metric that you're judged on, and that's fair,
fine,
I suppose, to a certain extent.
If
but
anyone
it's not
come
like
out.
The player development was he wasn't knocking that out of the park either. Like,
it was terrible, to be honest. Both were horrible.
There's a lot of highly touted guys who came through the system who not only didn't seem to improve, but almost seemed to regress under him.
The guys who did well, got the diamonds in the rough, basically, that we've been able to find. Brendan Gallagher essentially didn't bother spending any time there. You know, Alex Galchenyuk, he jumped right into the NHL, so he didn't spend... I mean, Alex Galchenyuk's development's its own fucking thing. Obviously, we're not going to get into on this one. You know, P.K. Subban, another one of those, I mean, second-round picks, but P.K. Subban could probably rise above anything. So, yeah, I mean, who have you seen? McKinnon? How's, not McKinnon, McCarron? How's he been lately? How was Nate Bolia? How was Jared Tenorti? Where's any of the guys we were counting on to be anything?
This team has whiffed on a lot of first round picks, and that's one of the reasons they're in the position they're in now. Indeed. And again, did they whiff on the pick, or is it poor player development? We'll never really know, I guess. But it definitely seemed like he was part of the problem. So I'm pretty excited about the moves they're making, sort of under the radar. We'll see if that's enough to sort of salvage the direction the franchise is heading, because the two main guys are still the two main guys.
Yeah. So Trevor,
actually, I haven't lost faith in Julien yet, for what it's worth.
No, nor I. I Julien impressed me in the final quarter of the season, I think. Not to say I wasn't unimpressed. I mean, the season was what it was. But I did think we saw some good things, and I thought he was very realistic about the situation for the final quarter of the season, maybe even longer. He wasn't doing things that made you feel like he was a guy just coaching for his job. Obviously, he feels he has some job security, yeah. And rightfully so. He, if anyone took a long view, it was him, and he should. I mean, look at his contract. He's obviously not going anywhere for a minute. And so at least I know he's taking the long view. And if we're willing to admit that there's a push and pull between general manager and head coach that could cause problems in Toronto, we have to acknowledge that, you know, we'll see what happens between Claude Julien and Marc Bergevin as well. Obviously, Julien is a Bergevin hire, but considering one guy definitely has a lot less bandwidth or capacity to prove himself left within the organization. I mean, Julien's got a much longer rope. Bergevin is definitely at the end. It'll be interesting. I mean, will that turn into a power struggle? Are they going to be foxhole buddies like the previous regime? So that'll be interesting to see. Is that's obviously going to play out, because Julien was finding himself, obviously, last offseason. It was his first offseason as the Habs head coach, and it was a weird one. And so now we see, I think, probably a guy who's going to start to think, okay, this roster construction is also going to be a reflection of me. I'm going to be on the clock relatively soon. I need this to start turning around for my own sake.
Yeah.
So that's what we got to look forward to.
That's what we get to look forward to. And I mean, Julien is going to be there, whoever our next GM is, and I think we're going to have a new GM within the next 18 months or so. The new GM is going to inherit Claude Julien. Like, I don't think Julien is going anywhere for a while, unless this team really bottoms up next year.
Yeah.
So whoever they do bring on board, they have to, you know, sort of conventional wisdom is that the GM should be able to pick their coach. I don't know if that's going to be the case for the Habs. So whoever they do bring on board, they got to make sure he's got a pretty good working relationship with, you know, a coach who's already in place and a system that's already in place.
All right, I got to get out of here. Final thoughts. I mean, the Stanley Cup playoffs are ongoing. We've got Washington up 1-0 in their series, though leading in the game as it stands right now. Not that that matters to people who'll be hearing this, by a 2-1 count. And then Winnipeg on top of Vegas 1-0. How do you see this rolling out the rest of the way?
I think Vegas is just going to curb stomp. Winnipeg's just going to curb stomp Vegas, I think. Yeah. Great, great story, but Winnipeg is feeling it right now, and they're a much better team.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go Winnipeg. I'm going to go Winnipeg in 4. I thought Tampa was going to win the series going into it. I guess I'll stick with them, but Washington's looked good through the first game and a bit.
Yeah, well, we have the right to, if Washington comes back and wins game 2 after we finish recording this, we have the right to switch and say we think Washington will take that series if they go and win them both on the road in Tampa.
Yeah. Which would be fun. I mean, any of the teams left, I mean, Tampa, I can take it or leave it, but if any of those other three teams end up winning the cup, like, that's a great story.
I'm kind of predisposed to not like Tampa. I don't know, just, I guess, because A, they're in Tampa, B, they're in our conference, C, I don't know. They're Tampa, I guess. They're in Florida. That's a different thing than being in Tampa. I would not exactly be thrilled that they won the Stanley Cup, but everybody else I'd actually be legit happy for. I mean, Vegas, that's not a long-suffering fan base, obviously, if it's a fan base at all, but the absurdity would almost be incredible. I'm cheering against it because then we might as well all you know, there's no reason for us to comment on anything. It turns out nothing matters.
Fair enough.
But at the same time, you know, you got to love some chaos.
But yeah, I'm gonna say Winnipeg over Tampa. I think Winnipeg's the almost prohibitive favorite at this point.
Tampa's got a hell of a team. I know, you know, we might.
Yeah, they do.
That team shocked Boston. Boston came out of that series being like, well, turns out Tampa was really good and we weren't as good as them. That's like everything they all said.
Yeah.
Was that team's too good? You know, we did our best, but they're just better than us. And yeah, they're down 1-0, and I thought Washington might pull what the Minnesota Vikings did in this past playoffs and just be like so thrilled with the win that they got in a game that didn't actually mean the title, that they weren't ready for it. But they came out in game one ready to roll, and we'll see what happens in game two. But they're obviously going to make this a series, I think. I'd be surprised if it just went Tampa all four now. So it looks like we're looking at 6 or 7 in that one, which will be fun at the very least. But I'm pulling for Washington, obviously. I'd love to see Ovechkin win it.
Yeah.
I've been Jets since, I would say, day one of the playoffs, but it's probably more fair to say since about January when I really had to find another team to pull for in the season. I always love me some Dustin Byfuglien, as our longtime listeners know.
Yeah.
So I would, and I mean, Winnipeg. I'm not a Canada's team guy. I know you're not a Canada's team guy. Most Canadian teams, I would probably be cheering for their American adversary in 9 times out of 10. But Winnipeg, that's just a fun franchise. They're fun to watch both play hockey. Their fan base is fun. Their story is fun. You don't need to cheer for them because they're from Canada, but it's just it would be hard not to be cheering for them since they don't even have a natural rival, I don't think.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think the Canada's team thing is overstated as well, but they are the one team that all of Canada can get behind.
Yes.
Like Montreal, Toronto, Ottawa, no one in that triangle is really going to cheer for the other team.
No.
So you're eliminating a big chunk of the population that way. And I kind of think Vancouver, Alberta, Calgary is kind of the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And who's opposed to Winnipeg, who lost their franchise for 15 years, who doesn't want to see them win the cup? The team that's never even been to the conference finals, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. And they're a likable team. They play fun hockey. Like everything is, they check all my boxes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dustin Byfuglien, you check all my boxes. All right, I'm out of here on that note. We'll be back at some point, right?
Oh, yeah.
Sure, we'll find some time. Don't you worry,
well,
kids.
Yeah.
Why not, eh? There's a draft pick. We've got 3rd overall. Who knows what happens with that? That'll be interesting. There's July 1st. The Habs have tons of cap space after they spend $6 million on Stastny. Get ready about that. Until then, find me on Twitter at ZachDropsTweets. He's on Twitter at the O'Neill Factor or the One Ill Factor. Either way, it's a good one. We're at the Montreal Bias. Keep checking back, rabbithabs.com, for content all summer long. Obviously, a little slower than during the season. But when we have our thoughts, like Paul Stastny's inevitability, we'll be putting it up there as well. Thanks for listening. I'm out of here. You're out of there. Any one final parting thought there, Sean?
That's a good one. No, I'm good.
Always reliable. I love it.